Through this day, but also looking at the summaries and titles of the first day, I have two keywords that came into my mind that are generating, I believe, overarching questions that I do not really know how to tackle, although I'm trying a lot to tackle those ideas. Now, the first key word is about metaphor and their role, and I'm going to get to that. And the second key word is, I need to read my notes, is about control. People have been using the word control or illusion of control, something like that. So I'm going to start with metaphor and a question which I hope will generate discussion. If not, that's life. And in order to talk about metaphor, I'm going to call upon Blumenberg. Now, I have two reasons to call upon Blumenberg. First, he has not yet been totally received in France. I believe I had a talk in 2005 by Heinz Wissmann from HSS, who began to come and get us to know Blumenberg. And he's I find him a very impressive scholar and a very, I would say, marginalized, I don't know how to say that, but history marginalized him and his thought through all sorts of complicated process. And one of the work of Blumenberg was in metaphorology. So he was studying metaphor and their role and how metaphor can help us make sense of, I would say, the human experience, but this is a bit simplificatory. And one of the things that he says and that I picked upon and that I really like is that actually metaphor might be some way, it's complicated for me not to translate that in bread and potato word because I'm an engineer. So I'm going to try not to translate it in bread and potato word, but that metaphor is what you will find the nearest to the truth, to reality, because they would be devoid through the work of the metaphor and the design of the metaphor of a totalitary ideology. The word in French is totalisant, which is not exactly totalitary, but that metaphor would not have this ambition of being rooted into something else that would betray reality. Now, this is a very interesting idea because many people I heard here used metaphor as something that was, oh, it's a metaphor, so it's not really reality. It's something that helps us grasp it, but it's not about reality. And what I'm stating here is that the only way to grasp reality might be through the metaphor, because it frees us from all the other constraints that we have to access metaphor. And in that case, the question I would like to think about with you through a discussion is, and why if metaphors were not the only way to access reality about climate change? Shouldn't we forget everything else and only use metaphor? So it's a bit radical, but I'm hoping to generate discussion. So shouldn't we only use metaphors? Now you have to talk now. If you want to. As long as the word metaphor is in your talk, I'm happy.
I'd like to answer with a question, and a really simple one. You asked, you said two words, metaphor and control, and I wonder what you have to say about control. How did that escape your control? And I would just respond to your redefinition of metaphor as that which protects us against the danger of totalizing ideology. I think that's a powerful articulation. I also think there's a very strong tension there in almost all of the conversation the last 2 days, where there is seen as, first of all, a necessity for totalizing metaphors, totalizing images, and also a kind of valorization of images, metaphors, depictions, statements, which successfully capture the whole. Mm-hmm. At the same time as there's a fear that the use of totalizing metaphors or images brings about either illusions of control or terrifying realities of control mm-hmm. by the building of systems of surveillance, control, police, restriction, repression. So what do you think about that?
So let's switch to the second question, because part of it may be in the answer. Still, I'm going to answer. One of the power of metaphor is that they can impose a false reading of reality. And that's where the tension is. And that's why we're so careful when we're using metaphors, saying, be careful. But still, they give us shared access, much more powerfully than many other things. And I don't have an answer to. I think it's something we need to work on. What I would like someday is that somehow people be less worried about using metaphors. That would be a step forward. But control and the terror of control gets me well to the second question. And there it's going to be a bit more complicated. Let's imagine that I'm going to tell a story. Well, once upon a time, people were in control. And I'm going to give you a simple example. There was a storm, and that storm would destroy your harvest. And the explanation could be quite simple. You had sinned. Because of your behavior, something wrong happened to you. You had responsibility. You had ownership of what was happening to you. And of course, that did not lead to nice things. This led to burning of people. This led to destruction of property. This led to extremely powerful religious institution. And then someone came along the way in my story, maybe Kant, maybe the time of Kant, and we freed ourselves from this responsibility. Nature became something else on which we could affirm that we had no control. A storm was a storm. It would come. We would try to understand it. We could protect ourselves. But the storm was a storm. It was not an act of God. And I grew up in that world. My grandfather would tell me, you should never believe in God. You should never believe in anything. Things happen. There's no fate. And then in that same story, time goes by, and suddenly we discover something really interesting. Today, now when there's a storm, everyone is asking, are we responsible? Is it our fault? Not through the act of gods, but through the acts of carbon dioxide, methane, whatnot. And this is extremely, for me, questioning, but it might be very obvious for you, is that maybe we're quite happy about climate change. Maybe at last we are free from modernity and losing our control over nature. Now it's our fault again. So we're back in charge. And by being back in charge, we don't care about 2, 4, or 8 degrees. Actually, we're quite happy to know that we are responsible again. I may be wrong, totally wrong. I may be right, and I think there's no right and wrong here. But my question now, with the talk of the 2 days, is that these images, these models, these things that connect through simple causal statement, because a climate model is a series of simple causal statements, aren't those images that are there to reaffirm the happiness of seeing that we are controlling things. And I know that We've seen a lot of interpretation of the Earth as a small thing, but one of the illusions it can give us is because it's a small, bounded thing, we're back in control. We can grasp it. And you have a model and you decide, I'm changing this parameter and the colors are changing. I am the one changing the color in yellow, in red, in blue, in whatever. I'm back in charge. So I'm just wondering if by using images, we are not just reassuring ourselves in the way I presented earlier. But this is just to generate conversation, and it's Friday evening, and I take you by surprise, so I will not put a huge pressure on you. But it's still, it's very questioning to me that people do not act in the face of climate change, and a possible new explanation is that, well, why act? We are back in charge. Who would like to give back autonomy to the climate system? Oh, you talk now. And no, you do not talk with a new question. So it's images as a tool to reassure ourselves about the fact that we are in charge as a species.
These are two great words, thank you. I'm going to give some credit to my colleague Bridget Neerlich at Nottingham, who has a paper called Metaphors We Die By. And it's a takeoff on Sanford and Lakoff, Metaphors We Live By. And one thing that she looks at is the metaphors always have a point of breakdown. They go so far, but they cannot be completely totalizing discourse. She talks about the Earth as a planet, or as a patient, and the Earth is a sick patient, and the climatologist is the physician to heal the planet, and the climate engineer is the surgeon to do surgery on the planet. And so I think another word that we could perhaps put around the metaphor and control axis is hubris. And so I do agree when it was said that we're the human volcano, we're as big as volcanoes, we're a geophysical force. This was kind of like a proud moment for some people to rise up and in a way take control. So I'm basically agreeing with you, but I'm giving some credit to Bridget. And I have a recent paper in environmental history called Climate Physicians and Surgeons, which is a metaphor that I think has gotten too much play without enough criticism.
I would like also to add to the metaphors. You mentioned Blumenberg, and I think it's really interesting reading him concerning climate change, because when he talks about metaphors, he separates between absolute metaphors also. And as an example, he takes the world. So the world is an absolute metaphor because we are not able to grasp it fully. It's too big. And so I don't know if I can repeat it in the right way, but it's about metaphors being a transition place before you come to the real term. And I consider that he would also call climate change an absolute metaphor. So just to make this more complicated maybe, it's not only about the surgeon, but also about the whole thing we are talking about at the moment, that it already is a metaphor, but we are not aware of it.
I'm taking note because there will be a summary of this written at some point. So I don't know. I will do the summary, so I'd rather take notes. The surgeon metaphor for me is a very frightening one because it's so ill.
Moi, je voulais apporter un commentaire à votre idée de métaphore, pour suggérer peut-être que justement l'image actuellement que tentent de nous donner au mieux tous les experts sur le changement climatique nous renvoie peut-être au contraire la métaphore d'une terre qui est malade de l'homme. Donc finalement cette image elle serait peut-être aussi réflexive pour l'homme et elle pourrait être effectivement son miroir quelque part. Donc dans la terre qui serait ainsi notre miroir, nous nous verrions nous-mêmes et nous aurions peut-être à apprendre à nous soigner finalement. Donc, enfin, c'est une suggestion, une petite pensée sur la métaphore.
I just wanted to come back to your analogy with gods and storms, because it's a very interesting one. And but I think you do need to distinguish between responsibility and control. I don't know if you can, you know, you can be responsible for the storm, but I don't think. I mean, I don't know how, and it's not my period, but, you know, how effective are indulgences in actually controlling the next storm for the people at the time? I work on planetaria, so orreries, models of the solar system, up to the 20th century projection planetarium and its contemporary manifestations. And what strikes me as being incredibly interesting in comparing what I've heard here in this conference is the fact that if you take the projection planetarium, the size planetarium, you have an enormous pleasure and pride in in the projector. So you present the projector, and you are incredibly proud of this building. So you've managed, through technology and architecture, to reconstruct the cosmos, or at least one part of it and one vision of it. And the planetarium, the projection planetarium, is better than the orrery, the mechanical objects, because it's a theater of space and time, according to one of the historians of the planetarium. You can manipulate time. You can go back to the skies of the time of Jesus. You can go and see the sky from the next star. And it is interesting to me to think also of the technology, including software and so on, in terms of in thinking about this issue of control and how these images, in how the power we have in interactive displays online or in museums, for instance, to create your own kind of global warming. You can say, you know, you take the plane 5 times a month or 5 times a year. This is what you get in 60 years' time. So there is a very kind of real aspect of that control that is mediated in public spaces. But I think there's also a fascination with the technology that enables us to produce these images, but also potentially, and the word was said, of climate engineering. And so the status of technology and of science within those debates about fear of and fantasies of control needs to be investigated, I think, in a more general way.
Yes, as you start out saying, this is Friday evening, so this will be highly speculative. I think it's really interesting when you talk about metaphors and control. I'm not sure what type of metaphors we're talking about here, but in terms of maps, which I'm interested in, and in Earth imagery maps of satellites, there's one theorist which we haven't mentioned so far, which is Max Weber, who talked about the disenchantment of the world as following from an enchanted world. And I think there's this quote where he says that the disenchantment of the world will continue for as long as the burning of fossil fuel continues, until the last drop of oil is burned up, which is also close to what Veblen talked about, which is sort of contemporary, but to my knowledge, they never really interacted. Never mind. But if we then come into a phase in the world where the burning of fossil fuel is increasingly questioned, and the faith in the disenchantment of the world is broken down, that is, the rationalization doesn't seem to solve our problems anymore, then it could be interesting to discuss of control as the re-enchantment, that everybody becomes a sort of magician, so to speak, that you can change the color of a global warming world from red to green. And I think this is interesting because the aspect of data and metadata also then becomes more and more important. I'm not interested in the data of the world or a map. I'm interested who made this map, the meta aspects. Of course, you could talk about this in irony and society as well, that things lose their meaning. But it's not that things lose their meaning, it's because they acquire individual meaning. So when we say control, do we then mean that the Anthropocene is the control of humanity, or rather that it's the control of individuals to create their own universe in which they are their own Harry Potter, so to speak? As you hear, this is highly speculative, but then again, we are.
Yeah. So, thank you very much. I think we're going to conclude by giving the microphone to Chantal.
Thank you. Je vais parler en français. Avant de remercier plus avant, je veux vous rappeler que cette conférence va être mise en écriture pour une plaquette de ce genre-là, qui est une écriture qui est faite dans une écriture qui est censée pouvoir continuer ce qu'on a fait aujourd'hui, c'est-à-dire un échange entre des personnes qui travaillent dans des disciplines très différentes. Il y en a qui n'ont pas parlé, mais qui sont là. Moi, personnellement, je suis une biologiste. Sylvie a beaucoup parlé comme climatologue, enfin, assez parlé comme climatologue, mais il y avait des cancérologues, des gens comme ça dans la salle que vous ne connaissez pas. Il y avait aussi des politiques qui travaillent sur la politique de la science. Donc, nous, au GIS, comme l'avait dit Sylvie hier, notre rôle, c'est d'essayer de faire une conversation à plusieurs voix, polyphonique, pour essayer de se comprendre mieux, pour se respecter aussi, ce qui est entre les différentes sciences n'est pas toujours évident, par rapport aussi à ceux qui ne sont pas des scientifiques, et tout le monde n'a pas à être scientifique, etc. Donc nous voulons faire ça, et c'est aussi pour nous un outil par rapport à tout ce qui se passe, et entre autres la COP21, où en tant que scientifique, nous voulons intervenir en tant que scientifique, pas pour faire le job des politiques, des professionnels, etc., mais pour être là et de pouvoir avoir ces échanges, et des échanges si possible intelligents, éclairés et, je répète, respectueux. C'est un mot que j'aime beaucoup. Donc, nous avons Audrey là-bas qui va nous faire... Orange, pardon. Aurore, mais c'est ce que... Excusez-moi, je suis... Aurore, excuse-moi. qui va faire pour chaque intervention un résumé, une synthèse. Enfin, elle va prendre la forme qui va aller. Et ça va être fait dans un style qui n'est pas le style académique, mais qui ne sera pas non plus rock'n'roll. Hein. Mais... ça pourrait. Mais, et ensuite, nous allons, pour les personnes qui sont intervenues en anglais, ça va être traduit en anglais, et chacun des... Pardon ? Non, non. Aurore, elle va écrire en français. Donc, ce qu'elle aura écrit... Parce que c'est en français, mais comme je vous dis, ça circule... dans les ministères, dans des endroits comme ça. Donc, peut-être on traduira certains, mais ce n'est pas sûr. Ce qui est important, c'est vraiment qu'en France, et comme porteur de la COP21, il y ait des choses qui puissent circuler. Ensuite, elles seront lues, elles ne seront pas lues, mais certains sont lues et certaines choses sont utilisées. Et donc, il y aura, pour les personnes... Pour les personnes qui sont exprimées en anglais, enfin les anglais, il y aura les anglophones, il y aura donc cette traduction qui sera renvoyée. Donc chacun des auteurs, nous vous demandons de bien vouloir lire le texte très attentivement pour qu'il soit tout à fait correct au niveau de scientifique, mais évidemment, ça ne sera pas un texte académique, je répète, et c'est souvent frustrant, certains se sentent carrément castrés, c'est très difficile, mais c'est un exercice qui est vraiment important, et c'est vraiment le sens de ce qu'on essaye de faire ici. Voilà. Donc, ce sera dans un mois à peu près que vous aurez ce genre de choses, ce sera sous la responsabilité de Sébastien. Donc, pour finir, je vous remercie. Nous vous remercions infiniment, le GIS. Évidemment, nous remercions Sébastien pour ce magnifique plateau, ces très belles interventions qu'il y a eu. Et puis Clotilde qui a vraiment... voilà. Et évidemment, les interprètes qui ont dû avoir un travail très, très, très compliqué, suivant les personnes qui ont parlé, suivant le vocabulaire, etc. Tout le monde, je pense, je pense qu'on a pris du plaisir à être ensemble. Et puis, bah, écoutez, pour moi, personnellement, là, je parle à mon... Pour moi, ce n'est qu'une étape pour des conversations qui doivent se continuer plus loin, plus à d'autres moments, avec d'autres personnes, et surtout qu'elles se continuent. Et puis surtout, comme il y a beaucoup de jeunes, le relais est pris. Pour nous, c'est notre plus belle, je n'aime pas le terme, mais récompense pour faire ce genre de travail. Voilà. Au revoir et bon week-end.